your title again? And I did not leave me a little money.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Tick, tick. Tick, tick, tick. Chicken on the menu. Chicken on the menu. Chicken on the menu. All right. It's working. You know why I do all those sound checks, eh? Because I've got this huge mixing board and all these neat switches and knobs and dials and, you know, plug this in here, put that out there. So I spend probably a good, 30 to 40 minutes before each Dixon James podcast getting the sound just right. Okay, so that's why that you just get that little bit of the tail end of the checking. Speaking of not, saw Shane last night. Shane and Tom. A lot of fun. Always fun to see Shane. He's just a big goof. He's just like a great big, you know, one of those big dumb dogs, you know, a big Newfoundlander or something, you know. Just a big, still a puppy, you know, but kind of goofy, knocking things over. It's kind of the way I see Shane. I love the guy. I love the guy. He makes me say that every time I see him, too. It really creeps me out. Ugh. And Carly, looking as lovely as ever. And the lovely Lisa. Also there. All of them at the Cadillac Lounge, where I had never been before. I can't believe it. All these things, you know, I'm discovering in Toronto. The Cadillac Lounge. Why wouldn't I have been there before? Queen and Dufferin area. So, you know, it's not that bad to get to. Take the subway up to Dufferin, take the 29 South, and bam, Bob's your uncle. Here you are at the bar. Good selection of beer on tap, reasonable prices, friendly staff, and some good music. Last night we saw, Ruby Dee and the Snake Handlers, all the way up from Austin, Texas. The joke was that we made a trade. We sent them Rob Ford, and they sent us Ruby Dee and the Snake Handlers. And we came out ahead because our mayor, Rob Ford, is in Texas trying to see if he can make Toronto into the music scene that they have down there. Good luck on that. But, poor Rob Ford. I really do, you know, as much as I doubt that I would vote for him, even me saying I doubt that I'd vote to him, I can hear some listeners up in arms. Like, my God, you'd even think about voting for Rob Ford? I really feel the press and a lot of the public just has it in for him. The man won fair square an election. So did Harper. There goes that analogy. I hate Harper. I want him out of power. Ford, I certainly don't support him for, you know, no new taxes stuff, but I defend him the fact that if the guy goes out and gets drunk once in a while, even in public, he doesn't have his finger on nuclear weapons or anything. He's not Putin. He's not the head of the, you know, that he's going to drag us all off into war or something. He's not kidnapping children. Just give the guy a break. Come on. He's a clown. God damn it, I'd rather him even than Mel Lastman. That was more of an embarrassment to this city. Jesus Christ. But it's all shame on Toronto for having a dysfunctional city government. Anyway, how did I get into that? I guess I overheard people last night. Yeah, making that joke and talking about it. But I like Ford anyway, you know. He's not bad. And I just defend the guy to be himself. Hey, he's human. I do really not like the idea that reporters think they can come up to his front door of his private home or his driveway and corner him on the way to work. Hey, get him in City Hall. Get him when he's working. Don't go to his house. That's off limits. And this is where I become a defender. Like, hey, guys, play fair. Like, you don't do that. That's his home. You have no right to go there. You know, unless it's a news story. There was a murder on the front lawn or something. But otherwise, no, man. Leave him alone. It is kind of, anybody who follows the story, anybody who's Canadian, is, holy shit, a couple of people he's been posed in pictures with are either in jail or dead. So this is the thing, his part-time driver, never full-time staff member, but good friend who's often in and out of the house, was just picked up by the police earlier in the week on drug charges, on trafficking charges, and so on. Of course, Ford says, I never once saw him taking drugs, or I never once saw him drunk. And of course, you can plead with that once. Yeah, well, maybe how about twice? You know, or 10 times? Well, anyway, he's just sort of washing his hands of that. So I'm not going to throw my friends under the bus, and I agree with that too. Hey, let the police and court sort it out. Anyway, gee, I did not want to begin by defending Rob Ford. How the hell did we get there? Oh, yeah, that joke. Anyway, it was great, again, to go to a new place I've never been before, the Cadillac Lounge. I will be back, I'm sure, partly because I was supposed to be at the only cafe to meet my good friend John Meadows, who I might have mentioned this earlier, and John got caught up in stage work and all the stuff he does and all the other lives he leads as a photographer and singer and actor and all the other worlds he inhabits. So we weren't able to make that. And I said, well, you know, on my calendar anyway, and this is what I think is very, very neat. I had a post to go see, what was it? Somebody V. That was it. I'll have to look that up. I can't remember the first group. But the reason was, if you remember, going way back, I was in Nova Scotia. I was in Cape Breton Island. And we had a beautiful campsite way at the very peak, was it Bear Cove or something like that, of Cape Breton. Lovely spot, and we were always intrigued by who was going to be camping below us, and sure enough, a young man called Chris Béliveau camped down there, and turns out this Chris Béliveau was in a band. You've heard them on this very podcast, The Backyard Devils. And he said on his Facebook page, hey, go catch Ruby D and the Snake Handlers. And also Ollie V. Ollie V is from Port Perry. And we had a great time talking with the bass player for Ollie V. Now, here's the best thing about the music last night. Stand-up bass. Great big old-fashioned bass. And the guy who was the bass player for Ollie V was terrific. He showed up in a suit. I was saying to Lisa, he looked like Paul Newman to me. You know, kind of an old charm to him, a really nicely tailored suit. But basically, he was a taxi driver, musician, this and that, and was a full-time musician in the 80s playing in Toronto. And it's basically since 1972 has been a musician, making a living there. But with this beautiful stand-up bass with steel strings, he said, now, he lent the equipment because the other... I'm sorry, am I losing you? Yeah, possibly. All right. I gotta get this out anyway. I knew beforehand, oh, man, this is going to be so boring. What did you do last night, dude? Well, here's what I did. But, hey, I gotta tell you. I gotta get it out. They flew up from Austin with no equipment, basically. I mean, a guitar or two. And they were flying right back. They were just going to do this gig at the Cadillac Lounge. First Canadian gig. So it was very, very cool to see them. And their bass player, great big guy, a real comedian, him and Ruby D, just up there dancing and boogieing off each other. And just thumping away on that bass. Ba-dum, ba-bum, ba-bum, bum, bum. Oh, man, that was good stuff. So, excellent music, great fun, good bar. And went up there, met the lovely Lisa at the bar, saved her seat. And then, sure enough, after seeing, by the way, different opinion on Gravity, totally Shane and Carly gave it 4 out of 5 against my 2 out of 5. They loved it. They thought it was fantastic. I guess the difference is that I went a little bit high, and I really felt I was just seeing through that crap dialogue, and those people were just so un-astronaut-like, you know. But the more they talked about it, the more I thought, well, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it wasn't that bad of him. I don't know. I wouldn't trust me, in my opinion. Hey, go for yourself. You decide, you know. So, Rick, if you're out there listening, this is our good friend Rick out in, Oregon? No, Washington. West Coast. Our Microsoft man. Our insider. The man who gave the bag to The Rock. Which, by the way, my wife is going out to Vancouver this weekend on train. And I'm thinking to ask her, to ask Barnacle Bill to give her The Rock so I can get it back. She's never been a keeper. And that'd be something. I could have The Rock in my home within a few weeks. Ooh, wouldn't that be exciting, eh? Oh, yeah. So, anyway, Yeah, so, Rick, if you want to go see the movie, go see it. Don't just listen to me in my opinion. Somebody else might say it was fantastic, as Shane and Carly did. Great to see them. They are here for a weekend of, I don't even want to think what they were doing at the Drake Hotel. But always good fun to see old friends, and even if they don't listen to my podcast, it just doesn't matter. That got us talking about Tim, and I believe Tim Coyne was doing a live stand-up last night also in Los Angeles. So I got to connect with Tim and bring him back on the show. And, man, there's just lots of stuff to do. So maybe I'm just going to leave it there. It's a Sunday. I was at 4 o'clock this morning. Can you believe it? I was just getting to bed at 4. And here it is. I'm fine. It's after 1 right now. On my way into my office to do some marking, I got myself a $1 McDonald's, Tim Hortons has a new one, just opened up down the road from us, brand new Tim Hortons, ooh-hoo. I got shit to do. It's overcast, the waves are just bashing against the rocks out here in Buffers Park, not a day for walking around. One more big thing. I don't think I mentioned this. Saturday, my wife and I drove out to Whitby to an RV dealer, recreational vehicle that would be, to look at some of the road trek, sort of these little motorhome type things. Not motorhomes, these little ones, you know, a camper van, I call them. And I went with the 170, the road trek 170, the base model, the cheapest, the smallest. In mind, thinking, okay, that's good enough for me. I just want a place where you can sleep. And, well, got a salesman. He said, I'll show you all of them. Took me into the 170. He said, you know, this is really a one-person van. And, bam, I'm standing there with my wife. I'm thinking, well, I guess that takes care of that. But you get in, and it's awfully cramped. You know, it's tight. It's small. It's a, you're gonna just feel very claustrophobic in here. This ain't going to work. Okay. So go and let's check out the 190. Oh, that's a little bigger. Oh, yeah, it's a little nicer, but still, you can't quite stand up straight. Ooh, I love the interior. I love these bucket seats. And, wow, they turn around. They're nice little vehicles, but I don't know. Well, let's look at the 210. Oh, now the 210. Damn it. Now we're getting to be a longer, bigger vehicle. I don't know about this, you know. God damn, it's getting in bigger. And finally, he says, all right, now, come with me, we're going to look at the Mercedes, the top of the line one, Mercedes diesel engine road trek. And holy shit, a Class B sort of motorhome. Was it nice? That one I could stand up in. And so as soon as you see that, you think, God damn it now, I don't want any of the others. I wouldn't be happy with this. It's comfortable. This you could live in. On a rainy day, a day like this, you'd be comfortable. You got a big flat screen TV down by the double bed in the back. You got your shower, your toilet, everything else. You got your, oh man, little table here. The chairs turn around. You can sit extra passengers in this thing. Man, oh man, this is nice. And then he says, okay, now, come on in. I want to show you Winnebago. And I go, Winnebago? Oh my God, that's almost a dirty word. These are road tracks. They're manufactured here, assembled in Kitchener, Ontario, on a General Motors chassis, right? Except for the Mercedes, and that's beautiful. And that's the one you want to go for. You come in, and he said, now look. And suddenly you step into this huge, tall thing where me, 6'3", stands up straight, and holy fuck, you got a sit-down table, a sides that pop out. He said, it's the same width as the other one, you know, it's only about 21 feet long, and you look at that, and you feel space. It's like you're in a living room, and you think, holy shit. I mean, I burst out, holy Christ. Well, I didn't say holy Christ, but I said, you could have a party in here, you know? You could have a party here. And that's what I'm picturing. Oh, my God. Diesel engine, just quiet generator, so you don't even have to be hooked up. Air conditioning, heater, full, you know, beautiful shower, shower, and oh man, was it nice! A bed over the cab like I had this summer, and you're thinking, fuck, now that's the only one I can get because I wouldn't be happy with anything else. And you sort of cursing. The trick is, it's like about $30,000 cheaper than the road track, the big luxurious Winnebago, because they're made en masse in the States. The road tracks manufactured here in Canada, handmade, very, very pricey. The Winnebago's better, more features, driving a fucking big Class B motorhome are cheaper. This one in the showroom, $75,000. Holy fuck, that's doable. So anyway, he took my name and number and said, I'll call you when the next, we got one more used one coming in October. I'll let you know. Now, I'm not doing anything about this other than dreaming. And it's kind of neat to dream. But just as I left this morning, I asked my wife, you know those motorhomes you looked at yesterday, can you picture us driving across the continent? She said, no. And I said, oh, fuck, well, there goes that dream. You know, why would I have a great big giant motorhome if it was just me? I'd go back to that little cheap 170. I just need a place to sleep for the night. You know, park it in somebody's driveway. You know, Uncle Ken's visiting again. He's out in the driveway. He wants to come in and take a shit. Just, you know, oh, God. But then I asked again, I said, why, is it my snoring? You know, there's beds. I could be in the front and you could be in the back and there's some space, you know, between me and the snoring. Or you and the snoring. And she says, no, we just can't afford it. And then I automatically say, oh, what the hell, you know, I got a line of credit, double that amount. Hey, this is not a problem, right? You just, bam, buy it, have fun, do the stuff you want to do. And then I'm thinking, you know, okay, now, let's say you paid $75,000, add on the extras, insurance, yeah, up to $80,000, say. Okay. And then you're thinking, well, for $80,000, God damn, I could have a lot of nice holidays. That's your trip to India. That's your trip to England. That's your trip here and there and everywhere. And then if you still wanted to go to the Boulder Dam and, you know, Mount Rushmore, you just drive in your car and you stay in a motel or a hotel and visit these places, you know, and you still come out ahead. You don't need a big fucking motorhome that gets 20 miles per gallon diesel. Very nice. So you really have to think about the future. At any rate, I'm sharing that with you because that's what we did. And it's just, you see, I live on fantasies. I mean, I like to think I'm plugged into reality. I know where we are. I know exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm talking to you on the Dixon James podcast, number 422, by the way. But I also like to play. I used to always say I need a back door for my brain, you know. If I'm whatever's in the front window, you know, I got tests tomorrow, I got an exam, I do this, that, whatever is going on in your mind that's keeping you busy and occupied and you're not too happy about, you always gotta have that back door. You can just escape out into the backyard and, you know, looking at a tree, having a few dreams, something else. You can just get away from all the shit that's really you don't want to deal with. And entertain some fantasies, and that's what this is all about. So there you go, there you go, there you go. Off to the start. This was the launching of another Dixon Jades podcast. Excuse me. And I think we're going to stop there. I got my marking, got my papers. I said I'm going to drive into my office today and get caught up and deal with all the other real-world shit I got to deal with right now. But meanwhile, here's a tune. I don't know if I've got it. All their stuff is online. Maybe I'll go to iTunes and I'll look for something by either Ruby D or, what's the other guy? Something V? Come on, come on. I just told you his name. Keep forgetting it. Ollie V. Ollie V. Rockabilly kind of music, I guess you'd call it. And my kind of stuff. Great time, great bar. Totally enjoyable, and just happy that I went out and did that, okay? So there you go. Bye for now. Here's a tune.
Get my fortune told, gave the girl my hand to hold.
Lord, Lord, I got them oozling daddy blues.
It was in a gypsy place, she read my mind and she slapped my face.
Lord, Lord, I got them oozling daddy blues.
All right, Al, swing it out, Al.
Lord, Lord, I got them oozling daddy blues.
Our 190 models aren't big enough for you. You can go to our 210 wide body models. This first one being the 210 Popular. The 210 Popular has a similar layout to the 190 Popular, except it's overall roomier and has added features. The beds are wider and longer. The cupboards are deeper. This model features a permanently enclosed bathroom. There's a toilet, a vanity sink with cabinet below, medicine cabinet, and 110-volt receptacle. To shower, you can sit down inside the bathroom, just draw the curtain across to keep the door dry, or you can bring the curtain and surround yourself while you're in the aisle with a stand-up shower like in other vehicles. Another advantage of the permanent bathroom is when it's in use, the aisle is still clear. The galley features a 5-cubic-foot fridge, raised for easier access, plus a 1-cubic-foot convection microwave oven. Because the oven and fridge aren't inside the galley, there's a lot more storage, including above the oven, plus two large cabinets above the counter, and a huge cupboard down below. There's 5 deep drawers, including one with an extra work surface. It's a large galley window, longer counter, deeper counter, and even a pull-out table for the 3 seats in the front. Now let's take a look at the exterior features.
We didn't screw up the results of the election, because if we did, the guy got in wouldn't have got in.
No, because if you did, nothing would happen, as happened with the last Canadian election.
Well, then there's that.
Yes.
But that's always fun. It was kind of neat counting votes, though. You felt, you know, that was kind of cool. You saw people actually cast these votes, and you were...
Part of the process.
Yeah, I like that. Maybe I'm much more of a romantic about things like that than you are, that's all.
Well, the fact that we can do it without getting shot at, you know...
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. I don't think we're as polarized yet as our friends to the South. I mean, there's 2 parties in the U.S., right? Us and them. Right? Yes. That's how politics works in the U.S. And it's so polarized that even if the other side has a good idea, because it's from the other side, you can't say, I like that. No, you can't. And that's how they end up, you know, I don't know how they're going to get past this.
No.
You know, like, they're...
Okay.
No, I'm going to let
you... And you know what? And that's fine.
They tune in the system to screw themselves and, the Marshall McLuhan Hour. That, of course, oh boy, now I'm going to have to talk about it. That was the voices you heard, Dr. Dave Brodbeck, Anthony Marco, and Bob Goyetch, 3 people who I really like, respect, and just enjoy hearing. They formerly, and we'll come back to it, I'm sure, did Best Episode Ever, Anthony's retro television show. This is a new one. This is episode number 2. You know, on the Dixon James podcast, I always talk about other people's shows. Hang on, I'm going to get the windows down here. And that's, you know, how could I not talk about this one? Delighted to have them back and just sort of a free-for-all, get out there. They put themselves under a certain amount of pressure. I mean, with the build-up that Anthony has for the intro. I normally don't like long intros, but this one's pretty delicious. Lots of fun. What's funny about listening to a show like this, I'm screaming in the background, arguing with them. Like, I could never keep up with those guys. They're just quick and... fast-witted, and I'm not, but some of the things, like, they're talking about Saturday, they all have different opinions, and I guess that's good. Like, I agree, Saturday Night Live is a piece of shit, and it's been a piece of shit for a long time, and Dave is still trying to say, well, come on now, it was never great, but there's still some good stuff. No, there's nothing but absolute shit on Saturday Night Live. All right, let's get that out of the way. Comedies, what's funny? Well, Curb Your Enthusiasm was great. Seinfeld was okay. It just wasn't my kind of thing necessarily. Nothing wrong with it, but it just didn't. But I think Scrubs was an excellent show, and very similar to Scrubs, Community. I love that show. I just think it's a great cast and really bizarre. They go right out there, very creative. None of them mentioned that show. I love Modern Family. I just sucked into the character. So maybe, I think it's something about how each of us has different tastes in what's funny. Like, I fight with Barnacle Bill all the time over shows that he can't get at all. And then I'll just sit, yeah, but he's a guy who just likes to sit and watch baseball all day. Well, okay, I'm not. But this show, it's just fun and it's entertaining. God, I guess that's it. I thought while I was listening to it on the way drive here, I'm in Thompson Park, sitting in my car because it's kind of damp out. While I was driving here, I was just thinking of all these things I wanted to challenge these guys on, this and that and this and, oh my God, presidents and American politics and so on. But I just say no. Go out and listen to them. I think there's one more point I want to make. I'm really glad they mentioned other people's names. They're sort of doing what I like to do, is draw in the community. They mentioned Eric Skilling, for example, who is one of us, part of this team. And I've got to say that of the podcasts I like, the thing I like about Tip Tap Tip is not whether it's great or not, each episode and so on, but that it's there. They just keep coming back and just keep doing more. And I like to think that that's why a lot of people like and support the Dixon Janes podcast, that it's just, you know, I'm going to be back next week. And, you know, whether or not I hit a home run, which seldom happens anymore, but I'm, you know, I'm just going to keep on doing it, and then there's going to be enough entertainment. And at the very least, who cares? I'm going to have fun. But no, truth is, I want more than that. I want people out there to enjoy this and get something out of it. And I'm sure Eric and Rochelle feel the same way. And man, hats off to all these amateur podcasters who are doing this for the love of it. And that includes the group I just mentioned, Bob, Mark, and Anthony. Pity that Mark has never been able to get on the show. They just keep running out of time, and that's... But I kind of love that more than anything. Like, Mark's not going to get on that show. Oh, boy. We love to tease, don't we? So I guess that's it. That's all I'm going to plug. It's a Monday, and I'm feeling very lazy. I did force myself to go out grocery shopping, so at least I'd say, okay, I did something today. But I just don't have it in me. I'm really a lazy person. By the way, this business that you may have heard me going on and on about recreational vehicles, man, when something gets a hold of me, I become really passionate. It's just something about the way my brain works. I'll get on a kick, whatever it is, and just bam, that's it. I've just got to go deep into that. And so I'm online, I'm reading, you know, reviews and consumers' reports on Winnebagos and this model and that model and comparing features, and I'm going crazy about just the whole concept of recreational vehicles and having one and so on. And like already by today, well, I'm just about done. It's not going to happen for many, many years, if ever. It probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's just, I need that kind of stimulation. And it's the same with, as soon as I take this course this coming weekend on ethics, I guess, in counseling, bam, I'm going to fire off about that, and then it'll be something else and something else. And I guess it's not a bad thing. You sort of get passionate and excited about stuff, and it's just like, the brain needs to be turned on. It needs this kind of stimulation. That's the way I am. You all know, of course, that I did go through a sensory deprivation experiment when I was in university. You could get an extra, I don't know, 5 points or something towards your final mark if you volunteered. Maybe it was 10 points if you volunteered for like third and fourth year psych students' experiments. And where I went, Sir George Williams, at the time, they were doing sensory deprivation. I don't even know if they'd allow that now, but they had me lie on a bed and go into a room somewhere in the university. I remember they had these labs, you know, and there's a guy sitting behind another room through a big glass watching me. And I'm lying on a cot. My arms are wrapped in gauze, and I've got goggles on with cotton bat in the eyes, so you just, there's nothing you can see at all. And earbuds in, or earphones on my head. Didn't have earbuds then. Playing white noise, just like a straight sort of a static, like a non-sound that's never changing. So no stimulation coming in whatsoever. You're just lying there. And all you have to do is last 4 hours. That's all they're asking for you. And they're just observing you. And, you know, within probably less than the 2-hour mark, you start hallucinating. The brain needs something, man. What's that little? Who just came into the room? What? Why is that? What's that walking across the ceiling? Hey! Oh wow! With the Beatles music, I love it. Abbey Road, thank you. Oh, none of that. None of that. It wasn't happening. My brain was just, you know, saying, "Hey, give me something here." And I remember the I thought I fooled them. I probably should have told them. I don't even know if I reported it. That when I thought maybe nobody will notice, I had my arm wrapped in this sort of layers of gauze so you can feel your fingers or anything, and I'd sort of smash it against the side of the rail of the bed, the cot I was on, just to get that stimulation of feeling something. So you know how brainwashing works and this kind of stuff. Hebb did this during the 50s when the... he was paid by the CIA. This was, and Dave Brodbeck, of course, would know this, although it's not really his forte. Well, yeah, it would be, I guess, behaviorist. Probably during the 40s and 50s, but certainly during the Korean War, when prisoners were being, you know, brainwashed and coming back as communists, and then they wanted to know what's going on here. So he was paid to do experiments, and they were asking these students to go through this sensory deprivation for 24 hours at a stretch, and they weren't able to do it. And then you got your move into modern times, you got your John Lilly who developed this tank, which I have not been in yet, and that's one more thing on my list of things to do, my bucket list, get into a good sensory deprivation tank. I believe they even have them here in Toronto, I don't know, with a saline solution sort of, and you just kind of float, maybe naked, or maybe you got a bathing suit on, I don't know. And you just lie there in the dark in this tank, and you're deprived of all sensations, and you get this wonderful feeling of, weightlessness. Lily did this, of course, under massive doses of LSD, and then later on, what was the drug of choice? Oh, MMD, what was it? The one that's even more powerful, until he was really on the verge of being crazy. He wrote The Center of the Cyclone when he was doing this, an excellent book. So there you go, topic of psychology. I should get back, you know, I should be reading more. Unfortunately, oh my God, the shame, the shame, the shame. I get into my comfortable chair. This is a habit that's happening recently. By the end of the day, say 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, I get in that chair and I have the TV on. I got the remote in my hand. And I'm watching that till 11:30 or so. It's just on in the background. Not even Netflix, not even choosing. Just sort of, I've got my iPad on my lap. Maybe I'm playing a game of solitaire. I'm checking Facebook and Twitter. And I'm using that. And meanwhile, there's just crap on in the background. And instead of doing something constructive like reading, getting in a comfortable chair, I just let my brain rot with the television. I'm really ashamed of that. I really am. I make it sound like on this podcast I do a lot of reading, but I can only read just a little bit at a time and then off on something else. Ooh, the shame, the shame. And maybe, again, this might be just part of age. You know, you lose your edge and you just, you get sloppy and lazy and, well, mushy. Oh, my God, that's an awful thought. So I'll leave it there. I want to go back and listen to the rest of these boys and hear what they have to say, because I really do love that show.
We have a really long common border with them.
Yeah, and we're there, and they are our largest trading partner.
And not just us, though, right? Like, I mean, I was listening to I listened to BBC World News at lunch, and this is going to have repercussions, like, insane repercussions.
Yes.
And the least of which, you know, will be elsewhere. I mean, in the U.S., it's going to... People who are teetering on the edge of, you know, insolvency or forget it. But, there was this village in Burma or something that was, you know, super dependent on the exchange of currencies between some government agency. And it stopped now, and they're like, fuck, we can't eat.
Well, yeah. Okay. So you go back, I'm telling you, just go back and listen to the Marshall McLuhan, I don't know, Comedy Hour or whatever it is.
More and more specialized.
I don't know. Entertainment Hour.
Will become
variety show. Okay.
Or higher.
Bye for now.
Whichever country they owe the most debt to. So ultimately.
There's a Tom Clancy video game kind of like that.
Ultimately, China will lean into the U.S.'s ear and say, you know, we really need you to put an occupying force in this country.
That's not going to happen. You're nuts.
No,
I don't. I'll bet you $100 that doesn't happen.
Well, if it doesn't happen, it's going to be because we're going to have a large-scale revolution before then, which is going to overturn things.
But, no, what's going to happen is that at the end of this, this is the time, this time I think that the Democrats are actually going to say, you know what, fuck you. We have to keep acting like grown-ups. We're not going to be the grown-ups this time.
Well,
okay. All right. Well, you guys want to hear what that is, and I do too. So,
say, no, sorry, fuck off. It's your fault. Fuck you.
I hope that's the case.
This is exciting. This is getting exciting.
I would love to see a smack handed down on this one.
Yeah.
I really.
Yeah,
would.
Me too. You know, like this is screwing with the world. You know,
like these millionaires who are holding things up. You know, they're fine.
The Koch brothers, you mean the billionaires, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know,
okay.
I just like
okay.
to see...
Okay, you can't hear anymore. Go listen to it yourself. All right, bye.
Voice of reason, they're just being ground out, but...
John McCain, people like that, you know, they're actually... Yeah, it's scary.
Well, the old...
Like, even like, what's the New Jersey governor name there?
Chris Christie.
The 210 is a true wide-body Class B motorhome. True Class B in that we start out with a full van body. Not like a so-called B-plus motorhome, which is really just a small Class C, and that they start out with just the van cab. By starting out with a full van body, we can get a much longer wheelbase for better ride and handling without having to take dual rear wheels. Our vehicles are much lighter, we don't need dual rear wheels. After removing most of the body, we extend the frame 18 inches behind the rear axle, retain the two rear doors, and then add this stunning and beautiful, fully painted fiberglass body. Rather than jutting out after the cab, it starts to widen gradually to its maximum point of the rear axle.
Road tripping with my two favorite allies. Fully loaded, we got snacks and supplies. It's time to leave this town, it's time to steal away. Let's go get lost anywhere in the USA. Let's go get lost, let's go get lost. Blue, you sit so pretty west of the one. Sparkle light with yellow icing, just a mirror for the sun. Just a mirror for the sun. Just a mirror for the sun. So much has come before those battles lost and won. This life is shining more forever in the sun. Now let us check our heads and let us check the surf. Staying high and drives more trouble than it's worth in the sun. Just a mirror for the sun. Just a mirror for the sun. Smiling eyes are just a mirror for.
behind the rear axle, we have another storage drawer. Have our external connections for water, park TV cable, etc. In addition to the usual storage area across the rear, there's also a compartment below the floor. There's a pass-through door for long items like skis.
And we're back. It's Wednesday, noon, October, I don't know, mid-October, 10th, 11th, something. Doesn't really matter. 2013, yeah, that's probably more important. I'm in a different park now. It's actually an extension of Thompson Park, but the other side of Brimley Road. For some reason, every school kid in Ontario was in Thompson Park today. I guess some big extravaganza, school buses. It's a perfect, perfect day. They were showcasing the old Thompson Farmhouse, which is a part of many school tours. You know, people in period costume. And it's the fall. Fall is a time, I guess, was Thanksgiving, to think back a little on the past, maybe. You know? Anyway, I'm just out of my doctor's office. That's all that was on my schedule for today. I really, really like my new doctor. And I'm thrilled. I just love his style. And he's new school compared to my old, who's on the way out and just very traditional. And, oh, yeah. He was okay. I mean, he knew what he was doing, but you always felt... He was kind of talking down there, and there was no interpersonal skills. This new guy just makes you relaxed, and his style is very relaxed. I really like him. I'm thrilled to have a new doctor. Anyway, high blood pressure, of course, still, even on the medication. You know, I was way up, 159, down to 157, and a 155 over whatever. Way too high, considering I'm medicated for that. He said, you got to lose 10 pounds and start exercising. And so today I took a walk, and I'm committed. I've got to do that. I really will make a point of doing this. Everything else okay. I'm sort of borderline. I'm in the gray zone between diabetic and non-diabetic, and I don't ever want to get that diabetic diagnosis, so I've got to watch. And his cure for that was just, hey, lose weight and get exercise, so don't worry about your diet. I like that style. Anyway... That's it for health. I was a little depressed the other day. I never worry about cancer. You know, hey, if it's there, it's there. But I do worry about Alzheimer's and dementia and just gradually losing your mental facilities. It's such a scary thought. Because what do you do if you're still alive and you're just a drooling idiot? It's just... Oh, you just want somebody to put you under. And so anytime you have a little moment when you forget something or, you know, you just, oh my God, you get frustrated with something, it's scary. It's really scary. Those of you in your 40s who listen to this, you talk about all your health and so on, but you're not really worried about your mental facilities yet. 65, you start to, my God, I can't afford that. Anyway, I'm okay today. It's like depression. It'd be horrible to be depressed, and it's misdiagnosed. A lot of people don't recognize it. I just read a wonderful article about it and how many people are hit by it and how debilitating it is and how people don't always see it. And they sort of have the approach of sometimes, oh, quit feeling sorry for yourself and get on with it, you know, and it's just not so easily done. I don't have that fortune. I'll have mood swings, and sometimes I'll feel depressed, but I never get locked into depression. Anyway, I wanted to come clean about something. You know, on this show, I'm always talking about books I'm reading, and of course, there's this Zen thing and Buddhist thing that I'm just trying to reach this higher level of understanding, of awareness, of living, you know, being more in the now and all that stuff. And sometimes I'll buy books, like the one I talked about. Actually, the library book I took out about Before the Beginning, What Was There? I read a total of 10 pages. So I just want to come clean. I'm not an intellectual. I might pick up something and think, ooh, this looks neat. Wow, that'd be interesting. And then find it's not really. And instead, that book went back to the library unread. What I'm holding in my hand now is the mammoth book of sex, drugs, and Rock and Roll by Jim Driver. I guess it's a whole series of books. I got it for $4.99 at Chapters. But when I was depressed, I went to Deja Vu looking for CDs, thinking maybe they'll find something that'll perk me up. I went through the entire store, did not find one single CD that I wanted that would pick me up. And I thought, hey, I got so many at home that I've paid for and haven't even listened to. So forget that. But I did pop into Chapters, which I absolutely hate. These are the stores, Chapters, Indigo, Kohl's, all one owner now, and they basically put so many other bookstores out of business or made it so hard for them to compete. This is a new thing. Wow, these massive. And there was a huge movement. Wow, it's great. You got sofas. You can pick up, read books. You walk in there now and it's like you're in a fucking, I don't know, bathroom store or something. And all these neat little tables of gift ideas, scented candles and this and that, because there's not enough profit on the books. And so they've turned it into this something altogether different from a bookstore. And I hate that, but I do go to the discard bins, and here for $4.99 was Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. And this ties in because these kind of books I can read. I love reading stuff about the 60s. The last half of the book is the rock and roll deaths, the suicides, the car crashes, the airplane crashes. It is pretty interesting. Some of these people you just forget died, you know, and then you get into the gory details of how they died. The Brian Jones story, you know, all the controversy of was he drowned? He was really teased. He had this beautiful property, and I was having people in to redo it, and these were hard-working guys, and they'd just be drinking on the job on the day, making fun of this little pussy, this Brian Jones, this effeminate character. And so there were kind of scary moments or insinuations that his drowning, it was probably an accident, but I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to get into controversy here. It's just, it was a sad loss. Mick and Keith didn't go to his funeral either, which is not very nice. But it turns out they were talking about kicking him out. So he died in 1969, early on, Stone's career, yeah, if you didn't know, sorry. But what has made this book so absolutely wonderful for me? By the way, before I get into that, on the walk here, I was listening to Chub Creek Dave, his walk with Chub Creek Gary, formerly of, through Algonquin Park. And it was really nice to hear Gary's voice, both their voices, an old friendship, and to have that friendship celebrated through an annual Algonquin hike together. And just good listening. So nice job, Dave. I like that. All right, back to why I'm loving this book. There's a section that hit me more than anything, the longer sections in the beginning about characters and events. And this one, this whole chapter, is all about the Rolling Thunder Review. Now, I am pleased to say that I attended the Rolling Thunder Review, Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review that he organized, with Joan Baez and Roger McGuinn. I've talked about it before on this podcast. The thing is, I can't remember a whole lot of it because we were smoking up in the crowd. That would have been at Maple Leaf Gardens. And it was 1975 when it came through Toronto. And, of course, I was here at that time. I'm glad to have caught it. But reading about it now as a historical movement, it's pretty interesting, especially the Ginsberg part. So I'm going to just read a little bit from that right now. And Joan Baez was there, by the way, and Joan Baez made a big stink about the fact that this is all about equality, and she was very, very politically active all the time, never turned it off, and was upset that the roadies and the bus drivers sort of had separate meal times and separate hours from the stars, the performers, and she thought that was a pile of shit and they should all be together, and they had an internal newspaper, and she drew a picture of a rock star with blood coming out of his head, sort of saying, if it weren't for the roadies, any one of you guys could be killed, you know, for all the protection, the security and everything, then why are you treating them differently, which was kind of neat. And so there were movements to eat together and bring a bus driver over to your table, whatever. But I want to read what Allen Ginsberg had to say about this very thing, because he was in high praise. There's a memorial photo, many people have seen it, of Ginsberg and Dylan at Jack Kerouac's grave when they went through Lowell, Massachusetts. And this is sort of the background story to some of that, which is great. Anyway, Ginsberg is saying, "It's a signal to the country," Ginsberg tells me on the road. "What happened in the San Francisco Renaissance in the mid-50s was one of those signals that characterized the rise of social rebellion." And, of course, you know that, the Beats, the Beat Poets, the reading of Howell in San Francisco. "And that happened in the very midst of McCarthyism. Then, in the mid-60s, the peace marches and the rise of rock, the Beatles and things like that, were among the signals for a further rising of consciousness, a wider sense of community. Now, the Rolling Thunder Review will be one of those signal gestures characterizing the working cultural community that will make the 70s. And sadly, that just didn't happen, because I bet you there's all kinds of people, listeners to this podcast, who have you've all heard of Woodstock, but who's really heard of and knows about the Rolling Thunder Review, this traveling band that Dylan wanted to get on the road and did? Ginsberg believed at the time, he even makes reference to, "Do you know what Dylan is talking about doing?" A principal of the tour says to me, "Don't use my name, but he might start a newspaper. That blows my mind. It'll be like a community newspaper, but for a community all over the country." So talk of really making social change and movements, and it just died. You know, they really believed that this Rolling Thunder Review was something big that was happening and would continue on. There was a spirit to it. And I find that really interesting, that it was such a big thing, and yet now we look back historically and it just, you know, Altamont was a bigger social event, sadly. So anyway, that's just, I'm just delighted, and I guess my point was, fuck the intellectual stuff. I'm really just much more into the cultural history of the 60s and you know, rock and roll and the kind of stuff that just I will read and I will enjoy in this great big fat dirty bastard book of almost 600 pages. I could read this easily, but 10 pages of that other one about before the beginning of time. Okay, so I guess I'm going to stop there. I've got, it's Wednesday. I've been going for 12 minutes. I've got probably another 6 minutes to go on this podcast. So let me stop here and decide what we're going to do. I think I'm going to finish this today and put it out there for your listening pleasure and gradually move back the starting time for Dixon James, or the release time. Bye for now. Listen, first of all, if you heard the Everly Brothers in the background live, I apologize for stepping on them. Terrible thing to do, but hey, it's my show, and I got 5 minutes. It's odd, because I thought I was going to finish this Wednesday, just say anything, and instead, even 5 minutes on the Dixon James podcast, believe it or not, the time is important to me, and I had to use it in a certain way, and I didn't know I'd be using it right here now before my class starts. I've never done this before. I'm sitting in the car listening to episode 2 of Best Episode Ever. They're talking about Mr. Rogers and Mr. Dress Up, and I scream out, yeah, but it was Captain Kangaroo, you know, and it's so funny to think of the difference of a generation, isn't it? I mean, it's not a big deal. It's just that my whole era is just kind of out of sync with the people I listen to and so many of the people I know. Like, no. I never watched Mr. Dress Up. It was Captain Kangaroo and Mr. Green Jeans and Bunny Rabbit and Grandfather Clock. That was my time. And Tom Terrific, the little cartoons. And Mighty Manfred, the Wonder Dog. Something like that. Anyway, God, I didn't know I was going to fill it up. I got a class I got to go into. I'm thinking it's a Friday. It's only a two-hour class. I got to give them a test. I think today is the day I'm going to tell my first ghost story. With most of these classes, I always tell them two out of three ghost stories. And I never tell the third one, which is, of course, when I met Jesus in Nigeria. It's just too touchy. I've got too many religious people in the class, and I can't go there. I just can't go there. Even with you, it's hard to share. Listen, my head is being pulled in so many directions. I think I've got another podcast in me. In fact, I do. Of course I do. And therefore, I'm going to have to get rid of that. But I've gone crazy over the Rolling Thunder review. It's just one of those things that jumped out. I don't know. Oh, yeah, I was reading this book, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. They did an amazing description. I guess it was actually from a Rolling Stone magazine, but there's a lot of good articles. And I was able to, of course, everything is on Google now, find out. Okay, it was December 2nd. I went to the second concert, I'm pretty sure, not the first night. 1975, at Maple Leaf Gardens here in Toronto, to see Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell and Gordon Lightfoot. Roger McGuinn. It's just an amazing show, and it sort of dropped out of sight. They said this is the most documented. This is when Dylan was also filming Ronaldo and Clara, that movie that's almost 4 hours long that only the French loved and nobody else did, and he just dropped it. It just bombed so terribly in the theater that it just wasn't shown again. So there is a bootleg album of this concert itself, but it was going to be sort of an era, of a change. It was going to be as big as Woodstock in its own way. And it wasn't. It was just, boom. It was forgotten about. It just, boom, it died. So it's exciting to go back and see what was actually there and what happened and all that talk about Dylan going to start a newspaper and everything and, boom, faded away. In the heart of it, he was releasing the songs for the album that wasn't out yet, which was Desire. Some great stuff. Now I got to go back and buy that album. I'm not going to buy the CD from the show. Oh, God, this isn't what I wanted to tell you. I've also, in the midst of all this, got out my suitcase. It's my grandmother's suitcase, full of diaries and journals. I mean, I'm talking hundreds and hundreds of pages of my writings, right up almost to the birth of my first son, 1990. And it sort of it just drops off there. I don't do that anymore. Now you got this verbal, oral diary of a lot of my life. But I've always been that kind of a record keeper. And it's kind of amazing. I was looking for, okay, where's the Rolling Thunder review in that time? Because I was in Toronto, and I've got sort of a before and an after, but not there. I'm looking, I've got 1979. I was in Cape Breton. Holy shit, I didn't realize that. So I was in Cape Breton three times now, realize that, on a solo trip. Again, when I was going to go back to Nova Scotia and live up at the farm and write my novel. And, of course, again, that didn't happen. I've got the whole period, 1972, just before I went off to Vancouver for the first time. I was changing girlfriends in midstream, and I've got all that time. I've got the jottings of that bad acid trip, which I want to talk about if I ever do tell that story in public. Anyway, a ton of stuff. It's kind of neat going back. I was an unhappy person. Like, I was just looking for meaning in life. I was looking for something, and I wasn't finding it. There was a lot of alcohol, a lot of drugs, which I knew even at the time weren't helping me. But lonely, wanting a purpose in life. And it's funny, I guess that's why I was doing all the writing, to sort of just get it out of my system. And my life is so different now. I have all the things I wanted, that relationship I was looking for, a real job, a home, family, you know. Wow. It's just weird looking back at yourself, you know, from 40 years ago and seeing who you were and what you were struggling with. All right, I got to end there because we don't have any more time. But come back because I'm going to be dredging through those diaries in the next episode following this one. So take care and bye for now. See you next week.